Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to the Explicit Measures podcast with Tommy, Seth, and Mike. Ooh, I almost messed it up there for a second.
Good.
Yes. It's rough. Only after doing 300 of these have I almost started to mess them up now.
See, over-exaggerating again. There we go. Not even there yet.
Man. I'm just optimistic. I'm trying to get into my creativity mode. All right.
It makes sense for you later.
It'll make sense for you later. Welcome back to the podcast. This is a pre-recorded episode, so just FYI. We will not be able to listen to your comments online and react to those, but we appreciate you still tuning in and listening to the podcast. So we will continue to make sure we have this available for you on this wonderful Thursday morning. All right, jumping in here, we're going to skip kind of intros. There really hasn't been a whole lot of news from the Power BI team at this point. There's been a couple articles maybe on the Fabric blog, things that have been coming out, but there's not been a ton of information just because it's January. Microsoft team is taking off for December. Usually they work on things, getting features done the month or months before. And so with the holidays and kind of ramping down, Microsoft just decides not to release a version to desktop until the February release. So hopefully they get their ducks in a row and we can get a nice early release in February, like week one, which never happens, but somebody will probably have to wait to week two of February before we get some updates around Power BI.
I think this bodes well too, why we do our schedule on Tuesdays and Thursdays. We're recording on a Monday, which basically means anything that can happen this week, let's say they drop another conference on us on Wednesday, well, we would have to wait. But that's why I think our Tuesday, Thursday works so well. We're in the middle of it.
We catch a lot of news as it comes out, and we're trying to bring you the best news. We just don't have any good news for you right now. So with that, we'll move on to our main topic today. So our main topic, this is a video. I think, Tommy, you found this one from one of the gentlemen from, the reason I know him is he's from the Monty Python skits. He's one mm-hmm. of the writers, I would assume.
He's one of the writers and actors. Yeah. One of the founders of Monty Python.
Okay. And is he a writer in general, or is that just, he's a director? Like, I don't really know his background. I probably should have done more homework on
this. All right. Okay. So
I'll let you do the intro.
Let me take over from here, because right. to do John Cleese proper introduction. Today we're about a video, John Cleese, who's one of the founders of Monty Python, which is also where the language Python actually comes from. Little known fact. So
interesting.
Monty Python, one of the most hilarious segments that came out of the UK, and actually was one of the, I think, beginning stages of SNL, all those kind of skits. One of the funniest people out there. He's done, if you've ever seen Monty Python, The Holy Grail, The Meaning of Life, The Life of Brian.
I have not seen The Life of Brian.
Oh, but it's look on with the bright side of life.
Yes. I won't do the second version. They're all skit segment. It's hilarious and that creativity. So mm-hmm. why are we talking about that with BI? And I think there's a video that John Cleese did at this management firm. It was really talking about creativity and management. We watched this video, or I sent it to Mike and Seth, and said, how well does this equate with business intelligence, with both report creation, adoption, everything that we do? The word creativity, normally we think of just with, I would assume, with visualizations, but we know what we have best practices and documentation, but nothing ever really always goes to plan. It's not always going to be by the book. This is not your normal recipe. So where does creativity can play in what we do to grow a data culture? How can we allow creativity? And talking about it in the realm of the video, there's a few kind of segments we'll go into there, and that's humor, that's being open to it. It's not pressing for things. And how can we apply that to our day to day?
Yeah, I think in the article here, it goes through five main points around being creative. How do you start getting creative, and how do you not? And I think this is going to be good, because I think, Tommy, you were thinking about this in the context of governance and admin, and you know, just kind of working through that as well. I'm not sure if I saw the parallel so closely to there. I definitely saw the parallel as far as being creative with building reports and solving data problems and how to solve these problems there as well. Do you remember what were the five main key points that I think you put out there that were kind of like the areas to I guess we should talk first about, it kind of opens with the idea of there's this open way of thinking and a closed way of thinking. And it kind of defines those two main key. Yeah. Maybe we should go through those first, and then we kind of riff from there.
So they've done a lot of studies on what does it mean to be creative? Is it a skill or is it an actual, in a sense, state? And some studies have done, and you'd think that, oh, being creative, that's just the person. Mm-hmm. That goes against the studies where being creative is being what's called an open state. We're all used to being what's called a closed state when we're usually doing what we do. It's the urgency. It's, you know, the task work. There's a deadline. Your head's down. There's a sense of stress. And that's called a closed mode. And creativity does not foster there. There's the other side of the coin, which is being open mode, or the open mode where there's we are simply in a state of thinking without an urgency, without a deadline, without a decision to be made at that time. And based on these studies, that's where creativity can really foster. And to John Cleese, who's, again, maybe one of the most creative people of the last 100 years and definitely in the top 10, he states that it's not a skill. It's not like a gene, or it's not just a behavioral.
I like that part. I like that part. Yeah. And he made a very strong parallel between the ability to play and creativity was, I think, a very a very relevant thing. And another point that he made in the early in the video, which resonated very well with me, which I try to have when I work with companies, is you have this idea of, like, there are no wrong answers, right? When you're in creativity mode, all ideas are a good idea,
right? And let me spray. If you watch the video, he makes a lot of how to screw in a light bulb jokes, but in a very John Cleese way.
Yep.
So I've taken the liberty, and I think we could spray those in as well. And in honor of what John Cleese did. So let me just spray a few. If you hear, humor is a big part of creativity. So how many business analysts does it take to screw in a light bulb? Two. One to assure everyone that everything's going according to plan, while the other screws the bulb into a water faucet. How many stakeholders does it take to change a light bulb? Four. One to ask for a greener bulb, one to demand a cost-effective solution, one to insist on a smart bulb, and the other question why the bulb needs changing at all.
That's so true.
How many stakeholders does it take to change a light bulb? Five. One to change it, and four to form a committee to debate whether it was better the old way. I got a ton. So, and
these are good.
Some of them, I've been saving them, but creativity is a huge part, I think, with humor. And I love that we do that on the podcast. And you don't think of business intelligence, data, and humor or creativity. Or at least I never have.
I think to your point earlier, Tommy, I think I immediately associate creativity right away with the report side. Like, I go right there. That's where I think I land. Like, oh, yeah, creativity. It's how the report looks. It's how the UI is. It's the colors. It's the palettes. Like, and I will be the first to admit, when I talk with other MVPs, other MVPs have blatantly said, I'm really good at building data models. I'm not the best at doing colors and picking graphical pieces. Like, they can put the graphs and the charts on the page and make them work, but making it all visually stimulating, I think, is a bit more of an art. And that is, to your point, it's a little bit of a different mode than the closed mode. It is an open mode. Be a bit more creative, allow things to kind of flow and try things out and not try things out. What are your thoughts, Seth? Any kind of initial thoughts for the article, or open and closed modes? How you think this relates to Power BI?
Yeah, I think sticking with, you know, the outline of what he's discussing first, right? And then we can talk about the application. But yeah, I mean, the main driver is between closed mode, which Tommy already outlined, right? This is where
task-based things happen.
And I agree that the vast majority of your daily, you know, execution at work is in this mode, right? We're not being creative with solutions, typically, not in the way he outlines. And I think this idea of being open in his five steps is going to challenge even what people, you know, who are listening right now are saying, like, oh, I'm creative. Like, not the way he's outlining it, I don't think, because we don't allow ourselves this process, like, time to do this process. And like, typically, so if we're always executing in a closed mode, you're generally not exploring different solutions or possibly coming up with the best one, because we're always, you know, outlining, he outlines that, you know, there's this mode of stress, there's an underlying tone of we need to get things done, et cetera, et cetera. And I this resonates, I think, pretty deeply with the way in which individuals who at least can do some creative mode or work that into their solution can look at problems differently, right? And see that, you know, a process is not good. Like, it's, we're going to introduce something that's not good. We're going to, you know, build a report in the wrong way, or, you know, whatever the case may be. But I think it, like, what'll be interesting to discuss is whether or not that's like creativity or just experience of of a lot of the learnings. But either way, like, it, I very well worth watching. Very humorous. I love his ending, which we can talk about later. But ultimately, it opens with this idea, like, the vast majority of how do you want to solve problems in your organization? I think it challenges that a bit, because if you think about, especially in the engineering realms, how we utilize employee time, it's typically in the closed mode. Go execute.
Yes. It's a very executive based nature. I would 100% agree with that one.
And my Seth, you said something very interesting about, especially in the context of the open mode, about the deadlines or making it a decision. When I think of being creative or whatever the problem is, part of this, and again, the video does a great job and John Cleese does a great job of, I'm not trying to be creative for the sake of solving a problem or in that context of, okay, I have an hour to myself. One of those five elements of being creative is time. A time and having that quiet. It's not like, okay, I'm going to be here and I'm going to make a decision in the next hour. It's being creative for the sake of playing or the sake of being creative. And I think a lot of times we get stuck like, okay, let's be creative. Let's think of a solution here. You're still in I think we're still in a very much closed mode, because we're still like, I have a deadline. I have something to solve. Let's just think of a different way of doing it. But that doesn't necessarily mean we're being creative. Mike, to your point too, and this might be a little parking lot, but you kind of correlated creative and the styling of the report. I feel like those are two different things to me when it comes to actually truly being creative and really designing something. I think there's some correlation, but I think there's a bigger kind of box here.
Yeah, I mean, if I think about like the surface area of things that are Power BI relevant, like, I mean, that's just what came to mind, like, when I'm thinking about being creative, because, you know, it's just my perception, right? Perception of creative people are artists and painters and people that are coming up with, you know, shapes and designs. And, you know, when I look at, you know, I go to LinkedIn a lot, and there's a lot of people putting out, hey, look, this is a report I built, right? And I can see reports I resonate with. Some reports are beautiful and they're like very engaging, and you want to like, wow, I want to see how they built this. I want to see what's made here. I would say someone has spent some time to step away and design this report for the Nike shoe, the BMW car, the whatever the thing is, and they're using very creative Power BI elements. And it's almost to some degree, when I'm looking at the reports and the creativity side, I'm like, it's somewhat like telling a joke, because I look at what they've done and I'm like, I wonder, how did they do that? And then I have to go look at the report and click on the elements and like try and determine like, what combination of things is it? A slicer? And like, one of the ones that I saw from Miguel Myers build was, there was this, the world map, and on the world map was a globe behind it. So when you clicked on a country, the country would like zoom into focus, but the shape of the world was like this circle on the background. So he had combined like a shape with the map visual and overlaid them on top of each other, such that whenever you clicked on a particular element, the shape of the map would then zoom into focus. And I was like, wow, this is really neat looking. And to me, it was like a joke, because there was like a punchline. Like, the punchline was like, how did you do it? Like, what is the output? Like, how did you put these various pieces together in a way that makes this look really visually appealing? So that's, again, that's just my perception of where I go creatively. However, if I try to open my mind up a bit more and think about other places where we could employ creativity, it could be creativity in how do you solve DAX equations. It could be some creativity around how do you model the data in a way that gets the output that you want. It could be creativity around how do you engage data culture within your organization? Because if you're super dry and you're just very task driven throughout driving those meetings around data culture, will people want to enjoy and engage, right? I think people would be more apt to engage if they find a fun, enjoyable, lighthearted, like kind of an inclusive space for people to really jump in and learn about data culture and how that you could help make them more efficient. So those are where my other thoughts go around where this could kind of go in other areas of Power BI, other than just the easy win of creating a report.
I think what's important to kind of outline for the audience here as well, which we haven't, right, is when John's outlining what he thinks the creative process should be, right? So it's five steps, right? Create space, time within that space. Time is number three. Take as long as possible prior to any decision, right? Confidence and humor. And he's really high on humor. But and then like there's a lot more after that. But I think outlining those four parts, and if I heard correctly, it was almost like a 4-hour block or something.
I think it was an hour and a half.
An hour and a half to get into the space, right? Like, and what he's...
No, it was an hour and a half total. It was like 30 minutes to like...
30 minutes to get into...
Like your mind wandered. Yeah, okay. And okay, I
really... Hour and a half total.
Yeah. And I resonated a lot with that point you said there, Seth, because he was like, the first 30 minutes is like, your mind's going to sit there and wander. It's going to go to tangents. And I got to do this and this task. Like, you got to let it do its thing and settle down. And then you get to an hour of like productive, okay, let's creativity time.
Yeah. And what resonates with me is like, he's kind of outlining this creative process as play, right? Like it has a defined start and an end, right? And you're putting yourself in, I think we're a lot of, I don't know, I'm not going to speak for other people. You're putting yourself in a position where to unwind from our closed mode. And because all of us are in this mode typically all the time, I think this is a challenge where you have to be, like, get to a position where all of these cluttering thoughts, family, kids, like work, stresses of time, get pushed to the side. And then the idea is to just ponder and make sure you're touching the subject, right? Like there is a focus and there's a purpose for this time to solve a problem, right? It's not putting pressure or stress on ourselves, but it's like it's creatively thinking of different ways we can kind of build the best solution, right? And this is, I think, the challenge that we can start talking about in like the application of in many different ways within our jobs, lives, whatever. But the having done this sometimes, but not an avid practitioner, pushes me back into like, well, my focuses of the day should really include this. And the outcomes he gives an example of are better solutions. Mm-hmm. Right. I think he gave an analogy where, you know, there was a directive and there was some other writer and he was done instantly. And he was like, how? Like he goes back to his trailer and he spends all this creative time thinking about what, you know, they're going to develop in the next writing segment, whatever. And his stuff is much better. Of course it is. Because when we allow ourselves time to really digest and think about potential solutions, you always come up with a better solution. And I think where I want to dive later on is doing that with other people.
Yeah.
Which I think you guys touched on a little bit, but it's this process of not instantly going, I know how to do that, right? This whole, there's an analogy that's used a lot in engineering. Like if it looks like a nail and you have a hammer, right? Bam, it's done. As opposed to looking at possible other solutions that could be better. And the only way you're going to get to that sort of thing is where you go through this process, or, you know, if you're going to do it collectively, you go in with this playful kind of behavior to drum up better ideas. And I think there's a lot to talk about in meetings, right, as well.
Yeah.
That he addresses in that topic as well. So I covered a lot of things, but I wanted to hit the 5 points of, you know, hit how he goes through and what he's recommending as far as the process is concerned, based on all this research, that produces a better outcome when we, you know, engage in like letting ourselves come down a bit. And then I want to spend more time in the confidence realm, but I want to keep
that. I think there's some, the five elements there are huge. And I've always considered myself a little more on the creative side. And I'll just kind of give an example of something I used to do back in the day of very much in this element or the framework here. A buddy of mine who you could put us in a white room for 10 hours and we would have the time of our lives. We're just always having very creative people. And we were used to do videos for youth groups. We used to put a lot of stuff together. And we'd always start on a week by week basis on what's funny, not like we have to get this thing done or this video done or this, you know, segment done. We just started in this realm of, did you see something funny? Yeah. And then not worrying about the end goal, just having that openness. And I challenge for some of you, like, how does this equate to BI? Think about the times you've been creative too. And it usually starts with maybe you're having coffee with someone and you're just either reminiscing or talking about something you saw. And that leads to a lot of other things. That is such an essential part of the creativity side. I try to do this and I try to get off my computer. I've been equating this a lot when I saw this video outside of just the report creation and solutions, but very much from a training and an adoption point of view. Because as much as we do the implementation Tuesdays, right, which are essential and best practices, I think one thing we've done on this podcast is we realize very, very strongly that nothing always goes according to plan. The people, the ingredients, the where people are at, the culture, all those things are going to shift, I think, the actual implementation of it. I'll get off my computer and I just try to use my whiteboard, which is essential for me, and just start thinking about what would I want kind of thing. And just thinking about all the experiences, but I have to get off the computer. I have to get off a deadline or, hey, we need to get this prod, you know, this training implementation done by the end of January. Okay. So where do we start? It's like, okay, if I had an ideal world for me, I always start like, if I had all the resources in the world, what would I want to be at? That's why I started doing speaking in the first place. The first conference I went to, I remember I was bored, not because of the content, because I thought some of the speakers were very monotone and it wasn't entertaining for me. And I'm like, if I'm ever here, I'm always putting myself in that situation. So I always try to start an ideal point of view, regardless of adoption or report creation. Like, what would I want? What would make me happy or upset? And try to forget deadlines. And I think that's the hardest thing for what we do is deadlines and project goals and milestones. And we're always trying to reach that end goal when a lot of times that decision doesn't have to be made today.
It goes both ways. I would say there are a lot of tasks that do fall into closed mode.
Yeah. Yes.
Right? Oh, like we have a bunch of things to deliver. Is there some kind of creativity in there? Well, you know, maybe it's design. It's like, but at the same time, a lot of it's experience. The more experience you have, the more this goes into a closed mode, which is just execution. I don't think there's anything bad about that. I think what this proposes is at least recognizing the times where we do need to be, okay, this requires a creative solution. We need to get into that mode to think about like this on a larger scale, or this is a big deal decision, you know, but let's dial it back and get out of the closed mode kind of, we're going to execute it on right away, which I do think creates challenges in many areas.
So I have a lot of thoughts. I've been trying to take notes here on the side because I had a lot of random thoughts around what's going on here. So first I'll say, I like this idea of like, towards the end of the talk, a lot of things John was saying was resonated with me. A lot of the things were around, hey, if you have a presentation coming up, and I've done a lot of presentations in the past, I don't really prepare very well before the meeting. Like, I remember the very first big one that I did when I went to Microsoft, I had the top 10 tips and tricks from Power BI .tips. That was my thing. And I remember it was a good session. I think it went really well. It was a packed house. I had a lot of people in it. It was great. But at the end, I mean, before I was preparing for it, I had prepared everything. I had everything getting done. I think I even reviewed it with you, Seth, and you're like, it's a little bit choppy and it feels a little bit slow. And so that's kind of my first pass. But that I remember the night before the deadline, I really sat down and I had been mulling the idea for months. I mean, I've been thinking, I knew it was coming out, but mulling the idea for months. And I really said, I need to fix it. And I literally spent that evening, the entire night rewriting and redoing all the demos and getting it all smoothed out. And then it went like clockwork. I mean, it was like, it worked out really well. I'm like, wow, it was a great session. That was really cool. And I felt really good about it. But the idea of the ability to have more creative people are more comfortable with that boundary of being around anxiousness, around not having the thing done, that resonated with me because I think I'm very comfortable being on the edge of that boundary. And Seth and I have presented sessions together, and Seth is not as comfortable as I am.
Do we call that final decision point or procrastination?
I don't know, but I mean, it's not like I'm not working on it. I'm definitely working it out in my head, but it's like all these, like, so my due date to when things are need to be done is probably closer to than the actual due date of when things need to be delivered than most people. Maybe that's what procrastination is. But for me, I could definitely see myself in a lot of those stances where a lot of the times when I'm presenting, when a lot of times I'm putting ideas and thoughts together, I don't do a lot of prep time, but I do a lot of thinking time. I have a lot of space to creatively think about those things. And to your point, Tommy, like you were just saying about putting time on a whiteboard and pulling things together, I get really stressed out if you try and make me like have a very close timeline to like do this, do this, do this, do this. I do much better job if I have like a Miro board or a whiteboard and I can just put ideas down and let them just, I need to get them out of my head and then I can organize them together. Yeah, I feel like I function much better that way than trying to be like, okay, task one, what should I do? Task two, what's the next thing? Task three, what's the next thing?
I do think in here though, that there you can help that creative process through skills building, right? So what you're talking about, I agree, creativity is not a skill. However, Mike, in multiple examples you've given, you've done speaking before, you've developed presentations before, you've, yep, you know, so you're mulling how this flow is going to work, et cetera.
Yep.
You've done that through experience skills, right? You've done that because you know a lot about your subject matter.
Exactly.
Website and all the tips and tricks you've done, right? Yep. These are solutions you found. These are, you know, all the technical bits that you're helping people out with already. You've you've developed posts, you've developed the documents, etc. All of that is a wealth of knowledge you're bringing into this creative process. And what I would argue here is John Cleese as well, you know, has spent his life doing writing and humor, like being a comedian and bringing forth humor. Like those are skills learned. There's whether that's learned through experience skills or, you know, reading and introducing that into his repertoire in the same way. That's why I think it's really important that we stress a lot of, you're not going to be able to be stress a lot of skills building or continual learning because if you don't know what the art of the possible is, right? Mm. If you don't know that 70% of all of these options exist for you in this thing called Power BI, in those creative sessions, you're not going to explore those. You don't know about them. Correct. And I think that's the part that is all struck me is there's still a lot of like continual learning, skills building, all of this, because then you can go into those creative sessions and get a lot more out of them or come up with better strategies or better solutions because you have all of this mulling around in your head, right?
Yes.
As opposed to, I only know this thing. Is it going to be a really great creative session if that's all I know? I learned something and then I'm going to think about it. And I don't think that's the point. The point is trying to draw together all of these things in your mind. And your mind is this thing that, you know, creates connections and works well, not under stress. But I would argue, even in those extremely stressful times, if you've been a hardcore engineer or coder, I guarantee, and you've hit a problem that is just killing you day after day after day, I guarantee you will start to dream about it.
Oh, I've done 100%
in code in your head while you're sleeping. But that's like, that's the same thing. Your brain is just kind of mulling over this problem.
Yeah, it's giving itself time to chew through the solution. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I'll be the first to admit I've dreamed too much about Excel. I have dreamed I was in cells typing formulas. That's a little sad.
I woke up one. I remember this was years ago, and it was this terrible model. We're trying to figure out this customer touch points. I woke up in the morning, like, and literally, I got it. So scared my wife half to death. She's like, "You got what?" I'm like, "Just, I need a pen."
Don't talk to me.
Yeah. I need to lose it. I'm gonna lose it.
I know the relationship. Who's relationship? So, Seth, you're speaking of, I mean, part muscle memory, and I can just equate for me, and also empathy. All the stuff that I do, and all with all the things Fabric coming out, you have to be closed mode if you're gonna get it, if you're gonna learn it. But I constantly go through it, and I think my favorite part of what I get to do is what I call like the arsenal or the tool belt. And you hear some situation, you go, "Oh, you could take a little of this, take a little of that. You know, maybe they need some of this." But like going through notebooks or going through the lake house, when does this make sense? And I think that's a big part of empathy, where we've talked about how do we learn skills and using our own data. But I think all the stuff we do, there needs to be a little bit of not just I'm doing it for the sake of doing it, like I just need to learn this skill, but when does it make sense? Like, when is it applicable? Or like, I wouldn't use it in this situation. I'm always, when I'm learning, that's got to be part of the equation for me. And of always kind of saying, okay, when would this make sense to do? Like, in not necessarily an organization, but we were talking about the notebook the other day. It's like, okay, this makes more sense in Power Query. Well, why? And they're part of learning is, I think, what I love about talking to you guys in our podcast is we're always asking that why, even in a how situation.
Yeah. Tommy and I were talking just before we got on the podcast that the podcast feels like a nice creative adventure away from your normal Power BI landscape, right? And the analogy here was like, we're laughing, we're trying to engage. And one of the things that he makes very clear in this is to go from work mode, you know, on task, closed mode, to open mode is some humor. Throw some humor in there and think about those things. So I think a lot of what we do in the podcast is try to make it, you know, it's not fun unless we're laughing about some things or making some light of some complicated situations. So I feel like the podcast sometimes can introduce like these lighthearted time or space away from your normal workflow to think about these things, to spend a little bit of extra time being a bit more creative, hearing some different opinions and perspectives that are different than my own. And I think the humor opens you up to those moments. And then I would do this podcast. I would talk with you guys about this stuff regardless, whether it was on a podcast or not, but I enjoy listening to your different perspectives on how you perceive the business and where things should live and who's administering things and hearing similarities across people's struggles around data governance and how this is a challenge. But I think this gives us the ability to kind of like really laugh about it, take it in, get into a bit more of an open mode space and tease out some of these ideas. Some of them may be great, some of them may be not. And one of the things that John was talking about, again, towards the end of the episode, was talking about how sometimes wild ideas make no sense at all. They're just crazy. There's no connection between these things. However, entertaining those wild ideas, nothing is wrong in creativity mode, allows you to make other connections you would not have normally made. Yeah. It's a progression where you will make connections like, oh, that does make sense. Oh, data culture is part of our problem here. But maybe there's some wild assumptions that are being made that you're like, well, that's preposterous. Our company would never let us do that. Or, you know, we would never be able to let the business self-service things. But, you know, entertaining some of these really odd ideas may get you to a new solution that is more reasonable, that would maybe meet the goal or objective. So I really appreciated the podcast just for me growing to learn from everyone in the community around how do they like to integrate and where they find successes or challenges with Power BI.
I agree with that, right? And the thought came, I had the same thought before I came into that conversation. But that's I think also the power of community and talking or listening to others in that
true
preform space, right?
Yes. So
very applicable. I think this podcast falls directly in line with there, and the value that some of that brings is just, yeah, these are ideas. They're like, it's not some big nebulous, like, we're not presenting a walkthrough.
Yeah.
Right. We're not presenting the closed mode. Here's how you execute on something. This is free form discussion.
Yeah.
Like the two points I want to make, and then I want to dwell a little secondary. Like, so he outlines this space where we're talking about me doing this on my own. And the fourth key is confidence. And I think that's where, like, he spends a lot of time. And that's why I said, go watch this video. But this one would be where bring confidence into this play, right? You just, every idea is a good idea. Nothing's wrong. Just let it go, even if it doesn't make sense. And just circle around this idea all the time. But it's confidence. Have confidence in this process of just developing freeform ideas, jotting them down, and you know, sometimes it, you know, even his point, sometimes you come up with something, sometimes you don't. Where I think this gets interesting is, what are your guys' thoughts around how you translate this into meetings within an organization? And one of the great examples he gave was, and this is completely unbeknownst to me, so if I'm speaking out of turn, just take it for what it is. He talks about the Japanese culture and how their approach to meetings is very freeform. And I guess one of the things they do is, any of the juniors in the room, they ask them what their thoughts are first, so that there's no kind of friction between, like, them thinking they can't say anything because a more senior leader has an idea first.
Yep.
What are, and I think he outlined a lot of other different practical ways in which meetings can be held. Ironically, he makes some, I think, some great points that challenged my thoughts to some degree as well, related to, like, very serious topics requiring humor.
Yes.
It doesn't detract from the standpoint that we're all here for a serious outcome.
Yes.
But we don't have to be so solemn about it, right? Like, this is where I think he starts to challenge structures of organizations or, like, people, right? And one of the things that of the whole talk that hit and resonated with me, and I think it was in the sarcastic ending, was where he challenges, like, oh, you mean somebody jabs at the humorous, you know, thing or whatever, and that challenges you to actually logically explain why you think this is a good thing, as opposed to just saying, yeah, I'm your boss and that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
Because there is a lot of that, or this was the decision that was made. It's like, well, why?
I love your points on this one.
In these freeform things, like, what are some good key things that you guys think people could do in meetings that are designed, like, okay, we have a problem. We have to come up with a creative solution. How do you encourage people to push out this closed, we're not ready to execute? And I think he made some really good points, but open the floor. Like, what are some of the things we can do or recommend to people to do in these meetings based on John's video?
So one thing I think the cultural aspect that he mentioned here is every idea is a good idea. I think that's very, very, very important. I actually was watching another video from Jeff Bezos. So Jeff Bezos does a very similar thing with his executive leadership as well, where the least senior person says their idea first, and Jeff would be the last one to speak and listen through everyone's opinions till the very end. Just because the idea being, as soon as a leader or someone of seniority says, here's what I think, everyone else was, well, the boss said it, therefore we should think the same way the boss does, and they stop being creative. And we all know good solutions come from diverse thinking, right? Mm-hmm. It there's going to be a lot of the better you can do that. So I love those two kind of really tangible things. One other sarcastic moment he had there towards the end of the video, I'm going to maybe throw this in there as well, was, you know, if you want to stay in control and you want to stifle your company's creativity, here's how to do it. Like, he gave you literally, you know, here's how to squash creativity at your company. And he basically pointed at number one step, remove all humor and disregard anyone who uses humor in any meetings as irrelevant, not important, and bad ideas. So as soon as you diverge away from that, you basically focus the entire organization to never want to go towards an open-minded or open creativity solution. It goes, and heaven forbid any of your subordinates become creative, more creative than you, because then they're going to outperform you. Like, that's, no, you don't
like,
want that.
So God forbid, like something to the effect of like, God forbid they use humor to point out that you're wrong.
And exactly.
you feeling utterly challenged and inadequate or something exactly. to that effect.
Yes. Like, it was great. So I thought, okay, also very well. So one is, and you know, I think I enjoy just a good laugh in general, but I think that does really bring down the tension on things and allows people to be more relaxed and enjoy, you know, the conversation. And frankly, people are about relationships. Humor is a big portion about gaining people's trust and being real and being empathetic to them. Like what you said earlier, Tommy, in the conversation, empathy is a big piece of this. So I think if I had to take away pieces from his moment, every idea is a good idea. I need to emphasize more letting the younger people by seniority speak first, newer, and see what they say and wait to speak. And then allowing humor and creativity to kind of flow inside these meetings. So, you know, building some time and space. And one of my comments from very early here was time equals money. So how much money are we willing to spend on allowing people to have some space to be creative? And is too much is probably a waste, but not enough means you don't get better solutions. So it's going to be a balance there.
The relationship part's huge. And I think there's always dynamics in what relationship you're in and what meeting. You can't tell everyone, hey, please watch this John Cleese video before our meeting to help in your open state. But a big part of that's the shared experiences, regardless if you're dealing with another BI developer or you're dealing with a stakeholder or report requester.
Sure.
There's something that they've had that has to do with the situation. The shared experience is a big part to kind of, I think, release a little of the stress of the agenda of like, hey, we need to look at this metrics kind of things. Like, well, how do you just being trying to relate, trying to have a shared experience? For me, it's I start from my framework of give me an ideal state. The no idea is a bad idea. Can't be understated in what we do. We've talked about this before, but it's like, oh, well, we need X, Y, and Z. It's like, well, what would it be like if it was perfect? Right? Like, just give me this ridiculous idea and let's start there. And I try to see if I can get people excited or if I get excited. Like, that's a big part of this rather than, yes, we'll do what the agenda says. Like, well, if you were to have X, Y, and Z in the most perfect way possible, if you had the best training situation or the best, you know, infrastructure, what would you have? And just give me that. Let's not talk about all the X, Y, and Zs. Just what would make your life better? And let's just have fun with that. And I've always been amazed. It's always been tried and true. Majority of the times, like, yeah, we could do that. Or give us a little more money. And yeah, we could do that. Yeah. It's never something. So to them, it sounds outlandish because back to your point, Seth, if you don't know the art of the possible, why would you ask for that? I will always go back to the idea of what Henry Ford said. If I asked people what they wanted, they would have said a faster horse. No one conceived a car. So just give people what would excite them. And then I can handle kind of the X, Y, and Z. So that shared experience in the ideal state. Now, granted, if you're in one of those meetings where the people involved, I would not start with a light bulb joke. If something's broken, maybe there's a little more because know your audience too. But there's a big part of that relationship side, a shared experience, or just how can we both get excited about what we're trying to achieve here?
Yeah, I agree.
I think as you were talking, like it brings to light that I'll probably start defining the type of meeting I'm having, strategic versus not closed, right?
Yeah. But
if there meetings in this case, we need to have a open creative session to figure out how to, you know, handle a problem. Probably the minority of meetings as opposed to the others, which are we're bringing a group of people together to communicate the things fast, concisely.
Right.
We have actions we're going to take out of this. Here's what you go do, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
The points I would bring to a collective meeting, I think he addressed to some degree, but like start with humor, right? Is there some sort of, you know, way you can lighten the mood, right off the bat? Another key thing that I think doesn't happen often and why I think it's important to define a type of meeting or maybe even say, hey, this is the type of meeting we're going to have, is One where you're building on ideas. Write like another one, which we've done, write them all down. Right. Because if all of these are fragments of ideas and we're free from flowing, we're playing, right? Like nothing is wrong. We're just going to have a board where people can visually see what's being talked about. And then you mentally can start to draw correlations because it's all there as opposed to I have to remember this all.
Yes.
Positive talk, encouraging, right? When you're playing, there's no right or wrong answer. And then he draws into I would stipulate, and this is the people part, you can't allow negative people or people that are going to put others in a defensive position into this meeting.
Oh, it stifles the conversation so much when that happens.
It'll kill it. Yes. Right? Yeah, and his point was, all it takes is one to put somebody on the defensive and they'll
stop talking.
They'll shut down.
They're done.
And they'll, yeah.
Yeah.
So those being said, through this talk of creativity and all this stuff that we're doing, where I think a great application of this would be?
Python scripts in Power Query.
No. it's in that initial workshop that we talked about in Implementation Tuesdays, where we're engaging with the business.
Yeah. Oh, right? That's a great idea.
Where you want these stakeholders to feel comfortable and talk about what they're doing and like think about new different ways in which, a business intelligence team could help them.
Yeah.
Like you lay out these parameters of like, hey, here's this creative idea we're approaching. Like think about this in terms of like efficiencies and like different data and reporting and insights that you guys would see. And we're not even talking about like the direct implementation. It's just, it's like, how do you broach that in challenges? Like, what are some of the things that we could do better? And so you're drawing it instantly away from, I have my process, leave me alone.
Yes.
This is my data. Don't touch it. all the negative, kind of closed-minded, here's my execution process thing, whatever, to have people open and explore different ways in which you solve bigger business problems.
That's fun because I'm thinking about that where no one really wants a report. They just want what's inside of it. And if there's an easier way to get what's inside of it, that's what they would want. Just right now, the report's the best avenue. And I think those workshops or those types of calls are the best case, but the most common case of being closed-mode, the closed mode where that's the time we need to be the most open. We usually go into that like, okay, you need these KPIs and these metrics, or we're putting together this project plan, so let's go through the requirements. And requirements, by definition, sounds like closed mode. But there's such a big part of there where you just start again, like, what do you want? What would this look like? If it wasn't a bar chart, if it was something that was slapped on your desk every day, what would it be? And that idea, I think, is by default is a little more creative. I mean, you think data, your first thought is closed, in closed mode.
One other video that I saw on YouTube was talking about, imagine the desert island effect. I don't remember exactly who said it, but it's bringing a light to mind here. You're on a deserted island. You can only be sent, 5 KPIs a day. How do you know your business is healthy? Just distill it down, right? You can. Sometimes there's a paralysis by analysis. What's going on? Well, how's everything working? Like, what are the 5 key things that we care about that can let us know if we are on the right track or not? How much money is coming in, how much money is going out, and what's our forecast look like? There's probably some very basic numbers you can people think about, but it's taking that mindset of like, okay, let's distill. Let's think simply. Let's use creativity to kind of get yourself in a place where you can simplify a bit, and then maybe that helps clarify the direction of where you're going.
I really like that. I have a hot take. I want to see if you're going to agree or disagree. I'll say it. I'll state why, and we'll see how much you can get on board. Microsoft Fabric and Power BI adoption relies on being creative to be successful. And this is why. The people involved are always different. The processes and the technology are always different. No matter if you have the best practices in front of you, the project to get that started, the project to implement that while it may follow the white paper, it may follow workshops, the people involved and getting the right people involved in the messaging needed relies on creativity.
It's a good question.
Well, your hot take is, do I agree with it or disagree with it?
Yeah. And I'm using the word strongly. That's what Todd relies on creativity, not it's helpful.
Relies on creativity.
Mm-hmm. To be successful.
So per every Microsoft answer ever, it depends. So, and the reason I say this is this. The Microsoft ecosystem allows for you to develop solutions in many different ways. And we've even talked about this. Fabric does the same thing. There's a lot of different ways to move data around. There's a lot of different ways to, visualize, to whatever the case may be, right? Does it rely on people to be creative? No. And the reason I say that is because just like this conversation where we're pushing ourselves and others to figure out those areas where they need to have more creative sessions to come up with a best solution. I think the vast majority of solutions that I've seen even are people who are closed. They learn only the thing that they need and they start building. And that results in solutions, but they're not the best. And it's the exact same example that John produced in this talk, which was there was a guy, he got some directive, he went and wrote something. Versus John went, got it, pondered it, came up with the best solution, and then wrote it. In this case, the same applies. Do you understand the ecosystem of Fabric? Do you understand all of these things that encompass this solution, and how do you better fit these together for your organization? Because that's a variable in here. It's not a one size fits all, because if it was, Microsoft would come out with, here's how you use our programs. This is how you build things. And that is not the case. There's flexibility. And that's where I say, yes, I agree. Creativity, like the solutions that come out of here are amazing when you are creative and coming up with the best solutions for your business. But I've seen both, so it depends.
Yeah, I'm going to, it's hard to kind of nail down a single point in all this. So I'm going to say it this way. The technology needs to be flexible enough to handle many creative solutions to get to the same answer. I think when you really distill businesses down and think about them, what they need most of the time is very similar. The needs are similar. We have, there's a model. There's some data that is being conformed in a way that makes sense for the Power BI report to run efficiently. We have, if we think about our business in terms of like dimensions and factual things, it's much easier to think about your business organization in those terms. Now, your facts and your dimensions will be totally different between businesses and the political nature. And I feel like most of the work around business intelligence is political in nature. It's the people part. It's very easy to use the technology. It's very difficult to get the people to align on a direction to go to the same, to run the same way using the technology pieces. So, what does Fabric do? What does Power BI do? I think what Fabric and Power BI do, it allows you to maximize your creativity to solve a wide variety of problems in a consistent way. And that just literally popped out of my head randomly.
It doesn't force people to be creative using Microsoft solutions.
I don't think
it's not required.
Yeah, I would say it's where I'm hesitating is I need to go hire a more creative person to get to the solutions that we need to run our business. Like that's what I'm hesitating on. Like I don't feel like that's what I want to say.
Yeah.
Case in point. We have Power BI, Tommy, and we unleash that to the business. Are these creative people building the best solutions on Microsoft stacking technology?
Well, that's why we have jobs.
No, they're getting. No, I mean, John, the vast majority are getting things done, getting the insights they need in rudimentary ways.
People are going to do it in Excel, whether you like it or not. So like they're already being creative.
That ain't creative. So
doesn't say it. Not saying it doesn't happen.
I would make the argument, while not necessarily required, like you have to know DAX and data modeling to build a report. You have to do that. Being creative in the adoption or having that part of your team is going to show more success than not. And I would make the argument, at least it would be significant success.
Not a Microsoft thing. I think that's the outcome of this conversation that we're recommending, which is this is very valuable. Mm-hmm. Remember to do it. Remember to take the step back. Remember, here's some ideas. If you guys aren't familiar, like in meetings, do it yourself. Do you have these big things? Ponder them. Think about them. Like, use your whiteboard. Like, all those, I think, are what is a byproduct of this, because there's much more value on the other side of doing that.
Mm-hmm. I'm in agreement. I love it. I have some jokes we can end on. Some little more light bulb jokes.
Let's not do final thoughts. Let's just do final jokes on this one. Okay. So let's wrap with a couple final jokes. Right.
Before we get there, though, what are some specific report build process areas that we can you think would push for, like, hey, take some creative time? For me, I think upfront requirements gathering, like in that interaction, and that, like, to me, that speaks, it's probably the easiest point. But also, one that strikes me is in the model design area and building calculations for visuals. So model design, meaning like, is this efficient? Like, what's the most efficient way? How can I restructure this data to, be performant? What are the types of visual choices I have that are going to impact what calculations I make, as opposed to just slap it together? I need to do this sum, this calculate, this whatever. And then, if you think more intentionally in that space, I think you will save a lot of time and money.
I would agree with your two points there as well. I think your upfront requirements gathering is a creative session. That is an open area and needs to be done and treated so in a healthy way, and getting a lot of people's inputs. Too many times we're given an Excel sheet and say, build this. And there's no reason to why we're trying to build this. And I think there needs to be more creativity around why we're doing what we're doing. So I 100% agree with that one. The other one I would add is be creative in your user groups, be creative in your building your data culture. Some data cultures in certain companies will be able to be built with just meetings and regular meetings, open office hours, that might work. Other organizations are a bit more structured and may have to have a different way of thinking about it. So I would try to treat those, the learning and education of your data culture using these tools, treat it in a creative way, trying to figure out creative ways to approach how do you engage people, give them the excitement of, hey, we want to do this because it's going to save us time and money.
To answer your question, Seth, one big thing I actually learned from Paul Turley is any reporting solution, or really any data solution, we always have a sandbox phase in the beginning where it's not afraid to go back after report requirements, ask, well, why are you using this metric? Or, hey, we put together kind of a framework here, but let's really massage this together. Let's really have a conversation here. And multiple pages, like, again, if no idea is a bad idea, take the liberty in that beginning stage to go, I know you asked for this, but I'm trying to figure out for you how you're going to use this. So we have a few kind of other frameworks here.
It's a great idea.
And rather than going, you wanted a bar chart and here's your KPI, it's like, well, how else are you using this? And don't be afraid to ask those questions.
All right. I like it. With that, let's do final jokes, Tommy, and wrap us up.
All right. How many machine learning experts does it take to change a light bulb? Just one, but it'll take thousands of tries to do it properly. How many report requesters does it take to change a light bulb? None. They'll just ask for a daily report on the status of the light bulb, but never replace it.
Oh, that's a good one. And it'll have to be emailed to your inbox every day. just email me a picture of the light bulb every morning.
How many BI consultants does it take to screw in a light bulb? Two. One to assure the client they're leveraging cutting edge light bulb technology, and the other to be outsourced to an intern.
Yes, that's spot on.
Oh my gosh.
Well, I think we'll end on that one.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Tommy will now have BILightbulbjokes.com. It's going to be coming down the pipeline soon. So jokes. Awesome. Joke.tips. Tommy, we should if nothing else, we should take this episode. We should make a blog post about it, and you should just list out all the jokes you've got and just stick them there, and we'll just write them down for you. People can refer to them later. So awesome. Thank you all very much for listening. We appreciate your listenership. If this was a good creative divergence away from your structured time, we really appreciate you letting somebody else know that this was a good thought-provoking creative space for you to think about things around Power BI. We'd like to encourage you to share this with other people as well. Get them involved, get them thinking creatively around their Power BI and their ecosystem. Tommy, where else can you find the podcast?
You can find us in the open mode on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. Make sure to subscribe and leave a rating. It helps us out a ton. Do you have a question, an idea, or a topic that you want us to talk about in a future episode? Head over to powerbi.tips/podcast. Leave your name and a great question. Join us live every Tuesday, Thursday, 7:30 a.m. Central, and join the conversation on all of Power BI Tips social media channels.
Awesome. With that, thank you all very much. Appreciate it. And we'll talk to you next time.